Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Quinny is a Scottish-born, Australian-based indie folk singer-songwriter. He is an artist that is capable of seamlessly harnessing jovial and moody overtones with unbridled relatability. And this fusion of innovation and fresh sentimentality is on full display on his debut album, Outer Monologue, which is out in 2024. With tours in the UK and North America under his belt, he has headlined shows at the Gasso, Last Chance, Retreat, and Fitzroy Pinnacle in Melbourne, Australia. Quinny also previously won the 2020 Darabin Songwriters People's Choice Award shortly after moving to Australia. He won the award for his single Found and Lost that will also be featured on the upcoming album Outer Monologue. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Quinny.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in Melbourne just now and I'm doing well. Thank you. How's yourself?
All good, thank you. So, obviously, you were not born in Melbourne, so how long have you been living there?
I wasn't. 4.5 years. I got here right before the border closed.
So was it a plan to move there, or did you just get stuck there?
Yeah, well, I was planning to move, but not as soon. I was planning to move in a few weeks later, but because my girlfriend's Australian. And so when I was getting wind of all of the borders closing and things getting a bit weird, I just packed up my flat in London and got on the train to Scotland, dumped my stuff at my parents' house, and then came over here. At the time, I was telling someone about this other day. At the time, I think my manager was maybe, my work was maybe a bit annoyed with me just in the moment, but then obviously later, like within about a week, she was like, yeah, fair enough.
Now, let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the creative music world, creating music, writing songs? And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
I'm not sure when it started. Probably when I was about 12 or 13. I think a few of my friends had started playing in bands and all that. And we'd got into Limp Bizkit and whatever else was out in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, but that's sort of where that's where I started, I suppose. And then it wasn't until I was about 13, I think. I'd had a guitar for a while, but I remember I used to go to the Scouts, and one of the leaders said that we should bring up our instruments, and one of the boys brought his drum kit, and some of the boys brought their guitars, and we played Smells Like Teen Spirit, and I knew how to play the bass line to that, so I was playing bass for that one. And it was after that I really got into it. I'd tried before that to get into playing music, but it was playing like with a drummer, with things locking in together, that it all started to make sense, and I started to, I don't know, feel excited about it. Just learning guitar chords and kind of music theory in that way, unapplied music theory, was a bit, it was a bit intimidating, a bit boring to me before that. So yeah, once it, in practice, once it all started to fit together for me, that's kind of where I get into it. And then about 6 months later, I was playing in a band. Quick after like a couple of years of trying to learn an instrument.
Okay, and then what were the next steps?
It was just playing about in bands for, you know, mostly in rehearsal rooms. I didn't gig until I was 16. And then after that, it just, yeah, I just played with lots of different people. I played in a few bands, and then I did some solo stuff. Funnily enough, I did the solo stuff to try and free myself of, like, commitment from people, but it actually ended up being probably the most collaborative. You know, the solo stuff is more collaborative than when I was in a band, because in the band, I felt like I was having to call the shots and say, like, we will do this, we won't do that. Whereas when I do the solo stuff, I've been doing the solo stuff for most of the time I've been making music, but it just, it feels more collaborative. I'm asking people more for the input. I've got my bit done, and then I'm like, ready to use what to do.
It's collaborative in a different sense, because I suppose taking the role in the band of being like, the motivator, getting everyone going, okay, let's do it, let's do this. It felt more like a responsibility on the shoulders.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're doing this collaborative and the as a solo, I'm not saying you weren't equal in the band, but it feels like everyone's wants to do it. I'm not saying that the band. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
No, you're right. No, you're totally right. It was, that's a good way of thinking about it. I would have to like try and get people to come, like the band to come to the rehearsals because they wanted to be in the band, but they didn't want to do the stuff that you had to do.
Put
to be
the
in
work
the band.
In, yeah.
And to be honest, it's the same. A lot of it's the same guys that were in the band that I play with now. But the, you know, with any band, there's a few, like I've kind of fused all of my old bands together on my album that's coming out. And so, yeah, so it's a lot of the same guys, but it's just that now they want to do it, I suppose. Whereas before I was forcing them.
Okay, so now let's dive into your creative brain. From 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in writing a song, what motivates it? What invigorates it? Is it easy every time? Let's unpack your creative process.
I think some of it happens really quickly. I mean, my favorite ones that I've written have been, I write without any instruments and I kind of come up with in my head when I'm walking or on the bus. I used to get the bus quite a lot. I used to love coming up with songs on the bus and then getting home and then trying to figure it out, making mistakes, but then the mistakes become the parts. And then I kind of have my bit done and then, I take it into some musicians and see what they make of it. We kind of bash it out the way I want to do it and then gradually it sort of morphs to how they want to do it. I mean, when we find the middle ground, I quite like not demoing my songs because it's handy when you go to record, but I like to see what people do. I don't like to tell them too much.
Yes.
Until I've heard what they're going to do. And then I can be like, okay, do those bits of what you're doing and then do these bits of what I was doing.
And you said that you make mistakes and then that becomes a part. So when you, in inverted commas, making those mistakes, are you getting frustrated and thinking, ugh, this is not working? And then you finally realize that those are the parts, or is it a straightaway realization? Okay, well, this is just a mistake that's going to happen into that thing.
Oh, a bit of both. Sometimes you keep doing it and you're like, okay, I'm never going to get this right. So what I had in my head or what I thought it was going to be, it's too hard. And so I'll just do this now. But then other times it's like I make a mistake. I'm like, oh, that sounds different. Maybe I'll do that one of the three times. Or, you know, I start to figure it out. Or maybe I only do it right one time and I do it wrong every other time. But then other times it's like you make mistakes and you push through and you're like, no, the other idea was better. Yeah, I guess it's a bit of boy. I try and something I think I've got better at is going with the flow, even with myself. Definitely with other people and letting them come up with stuff and being like, okay, what can we take from that? Rather than being like, no, that's not what I said, even to myself. Because sometimes what you said, it wasn't right in the first part. It was like, fine, but actually this could be better.
Getting that talking parrot brain and mind out of which I struggle with as well in different ways.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, I could imagine that someone like Prince, like he was like, no, it has to be this way. James Brown has to be this way. And, you know, I'm not, they knew what they were talking about, but I don't think I'm like that. I don't think I'm like Prince. I'm sorry to say.
No, but I mean, the thing is that we don't know. Maybe that was a thought it was mistakes that we don't know their processes. So. Being creative is a ball game that you can't put a definition and a feeling on, because every creative has a different experience of what they're doing when they create. So there's no like, okay, this is it. Because if it was that, everyone would be successful and have like making hit songs and stuff like that. So actually. So you got your latest album coming out, Outer Monologue. Tell us about it.
So I'm quite chuffed that most of the songs that are on it aren't old. Sometimes when people have their like first album, it's songs that they've had for 10 years. There is a song I've had for 10 years on it, but it's kind of my life's work in some ways, but it's also not. It's actually only like the last 3 or 4 years work. Was more or less all recorded in Scotland, apart from two tracks. One was done in Melbourne and one was done in London. And it sort of is a culmination of lots of the people that I've collaborated with. Not absolutely everybody, but I did pretty well. I placed Teapot in Scotland, so when I go home, I take a big chunk of time, go home, and then I've booked myself a weekend, 10 days, whatever, in this residential studio with a bunch of my friends. People come in and out, and we spend some time rehearsing, recording, and then... Then I come back and we do a whole bunch of other stuff. And it was good because it's all about, I realized that music is all about me hanging out with people and coming up with things is how I hang out with people. Yeah. So being creative with them is kind of how I know most of my friends. So I kind of lent into that a little bit when I was going home, and I'm like, what's the best way to spend time with my mates? And it'll be to go in a studio. So that's all we did. So long as I've got the songs. If I didn't have any songs, I'm going back next year, and I'm thinking I need to do some writing if we're going to do this, because I might have exhausted my best songs. But that will come once I know it's got it. Once you know you've got it booked in, you need a deadline. You know, it's for everything.
Why releasing now, in the sense that you said that you have got one song from 10 years and the others were like 3 or 4 years. So was it ever thought, okay, I'm going to release sooner? Or was it just the timelines of the way things happened that it happened as it happened?
Yeah, well, the song that's 10 years old, it's a new recording. I'd never recorded it before.
Oh, okay.
But it's basically because it's for the first time I spent a long, decent amount of time in the studio. In fact, what I'd done was, it was originally going to be an EP. And so I was home in 2022 and we recorded a few songs, 3, 4. And then I was like getting ready to release that. And then as I was getting the assets ready and getting like music video stuff done, and by the time it all got mixed and mastered, there was a whole bunch of reasons that things get held up. But then it was nearly time for me to go back to Scotland. So I booked another stint in the studio and I thought, fuck it, let's just do an album. and it actually makes more sense because it means I've got all of the assets and stuff ready to actually do a proper campaign, which is something I've never done before. So it's always been a bit ad hoc. So that's sort of why it's came about. It's just, I think it's actually because I've been going home and taking big chunks of time off, which is the first time that I've had lots of free time or lots of dedicated music time.
Yeah.
It's the first time in the last, I don't know, 15 years maybe, that I've had that amount of time. But some of my mates that I'm, like a mate of mine is playing drums on about half the album. He was a mate of mine from uni, and you know, we spent time together in uni, but I think that actually the week that we spent when we were hanging out together there, it was the most time we'd ever spent together, intensely. So you know that, like, yeah, I guess it's all around opportunity. I'm a little bit older and I've got a little bit of, you know, I've saved up a bit of money for it. You know, I'm not working like total minimum wage anymore. So Melbourne, because I was in London before, Melbourne is a lot cheaper than London, although it's expensive. It's a lot cheaper than London. And,
okay.
You know, the wages are kind of matches up. So I've felt like I've been able to manage my money a bit better, partly being older, partly, I suppose, working up in the workplace or whatever.
Yes. You know. You referenced that, it's the first time you're doing a campaign for an album, because it's your first album. Mm. Are there any aspects from the campaign that you're like, oh, I didn't realize this was part of it? This is surprising.
Not necessarily that it's surprising, but I guess I'm just impressed by how many people out there are covering music. You know, because PR has been like a big part of it. I've done some interviews and stuff before, but this last kind of season since, I don't know, when did I release the first single? Like May or June or something. Mm. Been doing lots of interviews. Are just lots of people all over the world that are interested in plugging music. I'm just dead. I love the internet for that. I suppose that we've got that. And yeah, I mean, I suppose as well, just the whole playlisting thing with Spotify. I never looked at it as much as I have now. I'm kind of like addicted to checking what the streams are. And I don't think I quite anticipated that. And sometimes they're better than others. You know, some days you're like, then that's what you're chasing. You get a couple more.
Also looking at, for me, like the amounts of downloads, it's very important to like take a step back and not let that be what it's about.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And that's why I've been like, I'd release music and stuff, but it's always about the gigs for me. So if I can get like 50, 60 people down to a little venue in Melbourne, I feel pretty good about that, because I've only been here a few years and, you know, I'm not out the way that I was when I was like 20 around Glasgow making mates with everyone and everyone was going to each other's shows. So, you know, it's more about, yeah, the live show to me is like, that's where you see the fans rather than like, I mean, even if I got 100,000 streams, I'd be like, who the fuck is listening to my music? It's like, I just wouldn't believe it. So it's at least that's real, that's tangible.
But why wouldn't you believe that? That amount of people would be listening.
Oh, I don't know. Just because it's never happened before.
Okay.
You know, and it seems like a crazy number. See some of the streams that some artists get and you're like, that all can't be real. I mean, maybe I'm just cynical, but
No, well, let's put it out there that all those streams will come in. But we're discussing this, so I want to find out your perception as an artist who's releasing their first album, up and coming, et cetera, et cetera. So I love me a CD. I love budgeting for a CD every month. For me, I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklet, and listening from song one to whatever number. The sound quality on the machine is 100 times better than what is received on a streaming platform. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, and cassettes, even cassettes, can you believe, a massive comeback. So last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million sales of vinyls, the biggest since 1990. CDs now, so in the UK, there's a basket of goods that they gauge for tax purposes. I'm not sure what actual purposes, but they gauge. Vinyls have been in it for the longest while, and because of the upsurge of CDs again, that product is back in the basket. Ben, the research is showing that it's actually the younger people, the 15-year-olds, the teenagers, the early 20s, those are diving into this world, not necessarily the people who are nostalgic and the older generations. But again, as you referenced, we've got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I mean, people want something physical. I think you always want to go and buy something if you're really into it. But also, if it's a smaller artist, people want to support. I think that I probably think that most people buy the vinyl and then still listen to it on Spotify. Because that's, well, I mean, that's what I do. That's what a lot of my friends do quite often. You'll put it on every now and then, but because you're like, you get your Google Home set up and the TV's set up for the Chromecast that's attached to the good speakers and all of that. I just feel like everything is sort of more geared towards streaming. But I'm doing tapes for this release. And I'm excited to do that because that's, I mean, but I'm more of a nostalgic thing. That reminds me of being in the car for my parents, So, and that's where, that's where I know most of my foundational music from. So, I mean, I'm glad that those things are making a comeback. I don't know if necessarily a lot of people are listening to them. I do see people when they do those, I mean, it was one thing on CD, but when they do it on vinyl and they do those, like, I mean, I know Taylor Swift done it, I think. Everyone's doing it, but they release like different versions of the vinyl. You buy the vinyl, and then like a month later, there's another one with an extra track on it and all of that stuff. I'm like, these things aren't cheap. I know they're not cheap to make, but they're definitely not cheap to buy. And I feel like they're actually taking money away from other artists that also want to put out vinyls. But people will be like, oh, well, I've just paid $110 for this one, so I'm not going to spend like $50 on theirs as well. But I mean, I think vinyl's great. I love it. I think it sounds great. I love, it's the physical thing. But I'm doing tapes for this one, which is good. I've done CDs in the past. It's always good to have something physical. I suppose this was about 10 years ago, but an observation that I had then was my first EP. I made out of vinyl sleeves. I made CD covers and block printed on them, but the CDs that I'd actually got to put in them didn't arrive in time. So I made like paper CDs and stapled the download code on it and put it in. And I was like, well, if you give me your email address, I'll send you the proper CD at the time. And when the CDs arrived, like 2 weeks later or whatever, I emailed everyone and then nobody got back to me. Hardly anyone even downloaded the thing off the download code. They just streamed it on Spotify and had the physical thing. So it was, yeah, it was just interesting that they wanted the physical cover, but they didn't even have it. It was a CD case, but they didn't even have a CD in it.
That's just, for me, that's just bizarre. Anyway.
Yeah, but it was because it was a hand, because I think because it was a handmade thing, they just wanted the physical thing. I suppose that's my point about people just wanting the physical.
Yeah, I understand. But for me, as a CD lover, I would like, where's my CD? I want that
Yeah,
CD.
fair. And I would have sent it to you. Like I had them. I was ready to post. I was like, I'm really sorry, but I do want to, this is my gig. I want people to buy them.
You've got the album coming out in October of 2024. And what's happening after that? The rest of the year, next year, you said you're going to be going to Scotland again. I hope potentially booking more time for to book new record new stuff. What else is in the pipeline?
I'm going to release a Christmas song. I've done quite a few Christmas songs. I don't know if you've had a look on my Spotify and all that, but I've got quite a few Christmas songs. So I'll release another one of those this year in like November, maybe December. And then I'll do a album launch slash Christmas gig where I'll do two sets. I'll do one set of the full album and then a second set of all my Christmas stuff. Yeah, and I'll have two separate bands for that. So that'll be fun. It's hanging out with more people. And then for next year, I don't know. There's a couple of songs that I want to release off the album. I've got some videos made and things, so I'll do that. Next year, yeah, I'm going to go back home and do some hanging out. But I'm going to, yeah, I want to record. If I can make time, I'll record and I need to make some stuff. I'm not sure what happens after the album, to be honest. I'm hoping to book some gigs. We'll see how this all goes. As an independent artist, it's quite expensive, so we'll see what kind of return I get on the things. But, it's also addictive, so it's like, I say that now.
Yeah, I mean,
But
if
I
it's a
might.
passion, it's just about like, let's just do this.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Quinny, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 20 hours, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time, simply because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. So without any reasoning, the first five songs that come through to your brain by other artists that you would push play to their songs once we finish this conversation. What would those five songs be and by whom?
Golden Slumbers by the Beatles. Through that whole Abbey Road medley is always up there. Lights Out, Words Gone by Bombay Bicycle Club. I don't know if you know that song. Do you ever listen to John Grant? Do
Yes.
you know John Grant? Yeah. Well, there's quite a few of his. I mean, I might say Queen of Denmark, but there's quite a lot of his songs that I like. Not so much his electronic-y stuff, but his more kind of band songwriter stuff. Go or Go Ahead by Rufus Wainwright. If you know that tune, it sounds a bit kind of Radiohead-y, and yeah, I've always loved that song. There's No Such Thing as a Jaggy Snake by Biffy Clyro. It's a bit screamier than I'm into now, but there's just the song does a switch kind of halfway, and I just love that. So,
Okay, so I know all those artists. Just a reminder for me about those songs, but I don't know all those songs. I need to add them to my list, so thank you. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
I hope that you're inspired to make some music of your own. And if you want to compete with me, want to see if you could do better, you could listen to my album and see if you can do any better. I dare you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.